down to brass tacks. Hello.
Hello, good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, good afternoon.
Tell me, is Mr. Murray still there?
No, not right now.
Oh, I'm very sorry that he is gone, because what I was going to address a topic that would, he would be, I wanted him to be part of it. However, I'll make a point on the IMF. Mm-hmm. Now, people talk about going to the IMF and that it has improved its conditionalities in recent years. But what people have to recognize is the IMF is a lender of last resort, and the IMF thinks like a banker. And any banker is interested in knowing that any customer can repay. So IMF, one that is absolutely certain about IMF, if we go to IMF, is this. IMF is going to ensure that if you go for, say, a short-term standby arrangement, say a two-year standby arrangement, they want to ensure that during that 2 years, Barbados will have the foreign exchange to repay them. That is fundamental. And they will ensure and know everything that will militate against that. They're going to try and check it out and make sure that it's done to ensure that they get their funds back in 2 years.
May I ask you this question?
Yes.
And what is the alternative? Is there an easier alternative to that?
No, I'm not here talking about the alternative. But I'm just saying that, I mean, we talk about it. Yes, I mean, obviously, no government, in any election, we want to go to the IMF. That's a fact.
No, they won't tell you.
They won't want to go. Because, in fact, it's coming to put political suicide. I mean, actually, to go to the IMF.
No, they will go eventually, but they ain't going to tell you in the election campaign.
No, that's what I'm saying. Then nobody will go coming on to the election campaign unless it's stupid. Because at the end of the day, listen to me, Barbados' economy is close to Greece. I have a book I'm reading about Greece. Barbados is close to Greece. And you realize, you say that LSD conditionality they impose on Greece.
Yes,
Greece had to get money from the European Central Bank. They had to get from IMF, and they had to cut the public spending by 30%. About 30%, and also pensions. They had to cut pensions, and I maintain that if we ever go to the IMF, there's going to be even a national teeth and bars.
No, but that is not your fundamental point. Your more important point is this: let's assume we do nothing.
We do nothing.
Let's assume that is perhaps your best case scenario. Do nothing. That's how people are projecting this.
Anyhow,
if you do nothing, what will happen? You say if you go to the IMF, this is what's going to happen. If you don't go to the IMF, what do you think will?
There is pain that we have to bear at all costs. Whatever we do, this can. The point about it is,
it needs to be explained to people in language that they can understand.
But Mr. Ellis, I think a fundamental problem in Barbados is we have created. It's a long story, but I'll say this: we have created a consumer society and a welfare state that the country cannot afford. The fundamental point about Barbados is that it has a welfare state that the country can't afford. For instance,
is that the fundamental problem? I thought the fundamental problem was the absence of growth in the economy.
Of course. I agree.
I thought that was what.
Of course.
Why is it that you all spend more time beating up on Barbadians? Beating up on Barbadians rather than looking at the real cause of the problem. Look, how much money did we lose from the international financial sector? You realize that it has been argued.
I agree.
That the loss of all of that revenue, tax revenue, from the international financial sector is a major reason why we can't afford this and can't afford that right now.
But then we go to the point of why we have lost it. You know, to Canada. And
but you're not listening. You know what?
Canada and all those countries.
Yeah, because you all buy into this notion that we help less. As long as Canada has clamped down, there's the follow-up to that. And the follow-up to it is this. Once you realize what happened, you need to come and tell Barbadians, what exactly did you do? What were your options and what did you do?
Well,
that is part of the reason why the university fees got cut.
But the thing about it is that I feel that the university, to come and tell me, and I will say this to you, to come and tell me because you want to get poor people to don't go to university, I must pay taxes for that now in 2018. If a politician came to my house tomorrow campaigning and he told me that brought that kind of foolishness to me, I would tell him, leave my house or I put my dog on you. Because to me, it's nonsense. In 2018, the question, look at Caseville. Many students can't find jobs. They're not producing skills that are used, as you say, would help the economy to grow. Tell me, I would support anything that would produce people that would have skills that would help the economy to grow. Because that's what you said, as you said, is true. But how many skills that those people have in the economy to grow? You mean packing up the
services
that they have to pay?
I grew up in the Barbados where the most significant point that has been made over the years is that Barbados's greatest resource is its human capital.
Yes, but how? But the matter of skills that.
But I am also saying to you that if you recognize that, and then you look at the weaknesses within your system, and you try to address those weaknesses in the education system where, and in the job market, so that if you're training people for the wrong purposes, then as a country, you start to reorient the direction in which the people are going with their training. That's what you do.
Well,
you don't do it by what you are implying.
No, Mr. Ellis.
That seems to be and let me just tell you how it comes across.
But you will...
It comes across as though you don't have any real respect and appreciation for building up the human capital.
That's not true. Not at all.
Well,
not at
so
all.
You can get a chance. You get a chance to respond to me. And secondly, secondly, you don't have any time whatsoever for the better off people in a society shouldering the burden of people who are disadvantaged and cannot afford it.
No, I don't think you get me wrong. What I'm saying is the country must know its manpower needs and train people for that purpose, to meet the manpower needs, in other words. I am not saying that, I don't have any sympathy there, but all I'm saying is, and this is 2018, not 1963, when the campus was open at the harbor. We are talking 2018. Where is Barbados going? Where the economy is going? Shouldn't we be looking at producing people with skills that would create wealth in this country? You go the fundamental point here.
What are those skills?
Eh?
What are those skills?
Well, there's a long story. There's a long story. We can't get into that now.
Okay.
But there's a long story to talk about. But I'm saying that, to me, this is where we're going. But what I'm saying, just turn out people.
May I ask you, in the last couple of years, how much discussion have you heard about creating those skills?
I don't know if I heard any lot of... I haven't heard any lot of discussion.
Isn't that what is required?
If the situation
is changing... You see, if we are in an environment such as the one we find ourselves in right now, it's no different to a company. If ultimately you are going to try to solve the problem by cutting and cutting and cutting, at the end of the day, I mean, if you can find yourself in a situation where you're not growing, that even though you want to hold on to as many jobs as possible, reality will fly in your face and you will say, look, you just cannot sustain this. This can't work because the money must come from somewhere. So the crucial issue here is looking at the potential areas of growth. Now, some discussion has been taking place in this election period about what is possible. And two scenarios confront us here. The opposition parties need to be able to convince people that whatever plan they have is a workable plan. All right?
That's right. That's right. I agree on that.
The government, though, may have the bigger task because the government has been there for 10 years. And the question is, how much do you have to show for the sacrifice that you've asked the people to make beyond telling people that it is stable and that people can still get food on the supermarket shelves? I can send you down Broad Street and I put you to a shop right now that when you go in there, there ain't nothing much on the supermarket, on the shelves. All right? But generally speaking, having said that, in general terms, in most other places, yes. That may be a peculiar situation. But people want... So the two sides are going to be faced with that particular problem. One has to come up with a sense of a program that is imaginative. But I'll tell you this, and I do believe we had a discussion this morning that may touch the real... nerve here. There is something in the psyche of a people that causes them, the majority that is, to gravitate more to one side or the other. And sometimes it goes beyond what is considered to be rational. People just like some, there's some chord that you strike. Look, Donald Trump is a fine example of it. Trump has been able to capitalize on something that some Americans just wanted someone to come and articulate for them. They wanted America to be great again, focus on America first, and then deal with the rest of the world. We don't have to worry about them. Let's make this country a country where people can work again in areas that people say, look, those jobs are dead and gone. It's too expensive. They say, no, we bring them back. Bring them back home. They're only dead and gone because the jobs have been sent abroad. So you understand the point I'm making there?
Yeah, I understand your point. The thing about it is that, Mr. Ellis, the fundamental thing is all over the world. As I follow politics all over the world, one thing comes over to me very clearly, that the people, and I think politicians must take some blame for this in Barbados, the people want what the country cannot afford. And everywhere, there'll be always this dissatisfied with any government. Trump came, and as you know, Trump is a liar. The boy tells no lies than he. And the people listen to him. And he said things that Hillary Clinton would never say.
Precisely.
I mean, no responsible politician. I listened to the campaign. You would have heard Ms. Davis. No responsible politician in Barbados, even so, would have told the people things that Trump told them. But see, when Pennsylvania and in...
And there's still people who believe him. They say,
right, and believe him.
And the press is only beating up on poor Trump. They don't want him to get through with his agenda, and that's why they're distracting him all the time. They don't worry about his tweets and stuff. And that is telling you that if you have a base, and you know, no matter what you do, mm-hmm. that base will be there for you. They make excuses for you. You know, they shore you up. And it is to try to get a majority of the people to buy into that.
Well, Mr. Ellis, I think I can deal with this now, but I want to talk to him about something. If he was here, both of you, I want to raise it, both of you. But since he's not here, I don't know. I don't have the time, though, because it's about Tom Adams' administration, right?
Okay.
And I was going to raise.
All right, then. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Hello, good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, hi.
Yeah, Mr. Ellis, I waiting to find out, people in Barbados haven't had a pay raise for the last 8-9 years. There's no productivity, there's no growth. How do you get pay raises? Could you answer that for me?
I think you could answer the question better than I.
Huh?
You answer the question, go ahead.
I would say to you, you don't get pay raises on product. You must get productivity on the cars first before you get pay raises.
Now, how do you get productivity and growth?
Because it's...
How do you get that?
Mm-hmm. While you're going to work and money, you don't get productivity. Is when you're at work, you go out there and pull your weight, and you put the business and you work hard to get productivity. I find it.
You know, there's a view that some of the more productive people in the world don't necessarily work as hard as others who are less productive. It's a skill of being able to combine the right technology with the right processes. So this notion that Barbadians are lazy and they are not able to produce as much as they ought to because they're lazy may not necessarily be well-founded. It has a lot more to do with that combination of process and technology.
Mr. Ellis, I live in England, right?
Yeah.
I Margaret Thatcher told people in England, pay raises have to be earned. Do not give up pay raises that haven't been earned. How are you going to get pay raises that ain't earned? Yeah?
Well, that's part of the process. In other words, it is true to say that you need to have some kind of measurement of performance. We accept that. But that by itself, from people who've been studying that area, that by itself is not going to be enough. So that you need to keep abreast of... In other words, if you got a factory, and the factory is not as productive as it used to be, You then have to ask the question, what is going wrong here? What machinery you have and what technology exists out there that can make the task easier and much faster, that can make you produce a lot more? And that's the reason why, I mean, we had a simple example here years ago of changing out, moving conductors off the buses, because technology came that allowed us to do that. People kicked and fussed about it at the time. I mean, the average supermarket today, the way that they are able to monitor what is happening with sales and be able, and restaurants and that sort of thing, technology has been integrated to make it possible to use fewer people, but to do it more efficiently.
So how the Barbadians going to get pay rises now then?
How are the Barbadians going to get pay rises?
Yeah.
The Barbadians really need to have some kind of plan. And the plan does not begin and end with government, but government has a leading role to play in it. Barbados, for instance, had something called the social partnership. And for years, this was hailed as, you know, a fine example of how you can bring everybody together, the main stakeholders, and plan things. All the information that I have had in recent years is that we fell away from that particular model. And by falling away from it, we just allowed too many things to drift. We must understand that if you've educated people in this country, then one way of trying to deal with it is to create mechanisms like those and make them work for you. Let them meet, put specific issues on the table. Let them bring their ideas, flesh them out there. And from there, you can take them to Parliament, take them to Cabinet. You can bring them back to the people. You can speak to the people directly about what you have in mind and what you require of them.
Agent?
These are the things that we I would think that's the way I have seen it work over the years. And truth be told, Barbados has had a lot of success with its system of governance over the years. But like everything else, the time has come for us to tweak it, or in some instances, look at radical change. Do we have too much bureaucracy in Barbados? Do we create an environment where every year ministers of government and parliamentarians in particular go into Parliament, put additional legislation on the statute books, and believe that it is something to go there and brag about because they are telling you, I have just put legislation to protect you. But what they don't discuss with you is what happened to the old legislation as well. To what extent have those elements that are no longer useful, those processes and practices that are no longer useful, that to some extent create additional stumbling blocks and hurdles? Those are the things that we need to, from what I've seen over the years, that's what you got to talk about. That's part of how you go about the process.
But Mr. Ellis, you had, the Parliament had, they cut their wages and they put it back on. What other people didn't have to pay, right?
Well, that's part of their strategy. And you will see in the elections whether that strategy works or not. I mean, we were discussing...
So I look at life this way. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. You shouldn't go on and put back your money yet and the rest of the people haven't had to pay.
But
and you got to, and you, hold on, and you got to... Price increase going up all the time. The SRR tax, this tax, that tax. And they pay out of pocket because they're still living on the same pay rates that they haven't had. And it's paying on the wages that they claiming that they got. They haven't had nothing to add to that pay rate, not even bonuses or nothing like that. Or whatever. So I don't know where we're going. I don't know how we get to this and where we're going to go. I just don't know.
Well, greater challenges, is it just the ruling party's greatest challenges I have seen it right now, is to be able to respond to what people are saying. Now, they have an opportunity to respond by way of word, to come now and tell you, well, you have had a problem with this or that. and this is the response that we have. This is why it hasn't worked, or and this is what we propose to do. I think their greater challenge has been, and weakness, is that a lot of that needed to be done along the way, because you can find yourself stacking up too many issues that you then have to be addressing. But that is my point of view on it. Not everybody sees it that way, and therefore all we can do is put it to the test. Let us wait and see what comes of this general election outcome, and we'll be in a better position to see whether the government's approach is new and different and can win the day at the end of it. This is Down to Brass Tacks. It's 1:23. Hello?
Yes, how are you this afternoon?
Hi, I'm okay.
All right, just zoom in there to speak on it because I would have heard after just now when you were speaking about the Keir Hill project and how it was abandoned and how people was looking at it from a standpoint of people only wanted to make money. And so I would like to refer back to that issue where that would have been very, they would have had a series of town hall meetings and so on that debate about that project. And I can remember as a guy that would have been at school on Saturdays and Sunday half days on bank holidays, I would have engaged, spoke to Mr. Tammy Hall there. He would have spoken on your program, especially when the gentleman from the professor from the United States was here debating, talking about that issue. On that Sunday, was speaking to the professor from the United States, I would have made a number of points of where I don't think that project would have worked in this country for a number of reasons. And I could remember Corey asking the professor when I finished if he had anything to add, and he would have made it he can add because he understood and see where he was going. So it ain't something that nobody kicked down or cast down. What I will say is that the government might have got out of it because of what would have happened with the plant in England that could wriggle out and get out of it. So, but it wasn't a project for me to this day that would have been suited in this country. But I want to get to this point. This election ain't about personal attacks. I think it is an election where I view that you have to deal with the issues at hand, because there are a number of things going on in this country, across the different areas of government, etc., that is causing a lot of concern. And when it comes down to development and the improvement of people, like I would have heard them talking about wages increases and so just now, we have to look at it. This election is about Barbados. It's development on how we are going to just to go about and save it. And this present administration has to account to the Barbadians for their stewardship. It ain't about me, it ain't about you, Mr. Ellis, it ain't about the individuals. So if they are going to come to talk about individuals and look at persons and look at characters, they are far out of willing, because this election is about Barbados and its development. And one of the things that I see that should come out of this is that there should be able to defend the fact as to why they did not listen, why there were not the kind of consultation, why there wasn't the thing in getting the country moved forward. I am looking at the failed policies, the different things that would have come out over the past 10 years. And I don't think this election should be about the individuals, who is who and where. It is all about accountability and what would have happened in the past. So therefore, I am not wanting.
Well, accountability about what specifically, though?
Specifically, okay, we are in a financial mess, a situation that even their former prime minister asked the How did we get there? That is what they have to come and account. How did we get back?
But you heard the counter to that. The counter has been, but people are still importing cars, people still eating and drinking, they're still going fetting, the country and fall apart.
Yeah. I would understand that counter.
How do you deal with that?
All I'm saying is that we have people in Barbados, the Barbadian people, they are very proud. They will do, they will be struggling, but I am saying that they have to account.
All right, but you said so already. You said that.
Was first.
Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, is this Tony Marshall?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Marshall, the former moderator, former ambassador to the United Nations, what prompts you to call us today?
I want to raise a question or two about the election.
Sure.
But not the political election, the religious election. I almost said papal.
Yes.
I wonder, I have been following the outcome of the votes over the various rungs that they have had. And it seems to me that the lady, whom I prefer to label as the people, are saying very clearly and quite loudly what their views are. We also have the clergy who are saying what they think. But it leads me to ask, who owns the church? Who makes the church? And my answer to both of those questions is the people. Now, if that is so, then I would think that some serious attention should be paid to the situation that exists. And I am inferring, perhaps in ignorance, that this matter should have been concluded because the people have spoken. Vox populi, vox dei. I would love to hear some comment to that issue that I've raised.
Well, I think you know full well that while the people may want something, the clergy with whom the new bishop would have to work would also want to be confident about the person with whom they're working, and they would have had a closer working relationship and assessment of the individuals whose names have been advanced. And while you are indeed correct in holding to the position that the voice of the people ought to be heard, I think that it could also be argued that the clergy are people too. And they want...
Not disagreeing with you, but there's one aspect that I want you to just spend another minute and look at.
Sure.
Who is the church? I say to you, the church is the people.
Yes.
And without the people, there's no church.
That is correct.
So on that basis, and if one accepts that, then I can't see how your argument about the clergy having a voice would hold a lot of weight. I do not discount it. I respect it.
Mm.
But I still want to say that the culture that we have been associated with and live in continues to contend that the people matter.
Well,
this
is my question. My recollection of the Anglican Church and its leadership goes back to the days, I think it was Bishop Evans. And I've seen since those days, I can remember Drexel Gomez, I remember Bishop Broom. Indeed, my recollection is that Gomez came in from the Bahamas because of a stalemate at the Barbados level.
Indeed, I agree with you.
Some conflict, I don't know if I don't know the history of it, as to whether it was a conflict between the clergy and the laity. But it is recognized, I do not know on what happened on previous occasions, whether we had a similar conflict and who emerged victorious as a consequence of any such conflict. Do you recall?
Not with any specificity, but I don't like your word conflict. There's no conflict existing. There is a situation where there are two houses. Where I think some emphasis and serious attention needs to be paid right now is which house represents the people and is the percentage vote of the people in one house
what about
higher than the other?
What about the word compromise? Can that come into this equation?
Of course, of course. There's always room for compromise in any sort of competitive environment.
A bishop cannot lead the Anglican Church by himself. A bishop would have to take seriously into consideration whether he has the kind of support from the clergy that would make him comfortable, notwithstanding how much support he may have from the people. And I think
that
that's
well accepted.
That's the dilemma.
That
there
is well accepted. Mm-hmm. I take that point fully on board. I give it thought.
Mm-hmm.
But I remain wedded to the fact that the people must matter. If there are no people, there will be no church. I cannot say the same thing about the clergy, because one of people could assume the role of clergy. One of them could. I'm not saying that that's the most desirable position, but what I'm trying to say is that the people are of greater importance in this context than the clergy.
Well, you know,
nevertheless,
I don't know enough about the process, and you know, there are so many scenarios where people can feel that a particular candidate is better for the church based upon popularity. Sometimes people, I'm not saying this happened in this case, but I suppose ultimately in one form or another, a person effectively campaigns in the sense that even if a person doesn't deliberately go out there to campaign, by virtue of the strength of delivery and personality and that sort of thing, over time that person may be able to have that kind of influence. While on the other hand, those who are working with a person may, for various reasons, see aspects of their management and deportment and that sort of thing, which may make them say, not necessarily that the person is unfit for leadership, but they may argue that at this time, they prefer somebody else because they're close enough to the action. Many of us are just outside here watching on to see what emerges. We are not within the confines of the particular polling area and in a position to see how many votes people have been able to garner. But I sincerely hope, and this is my hope, Tony, for the Anglican Church, that whatever happens, they emerge with a leader who can help to bring a stronger sense of presence of the Anglican Church in Barbados. I'll say this because from where I sit, I get the impression that the evangelicals are in a position where they appear more dominant, even if they are not numerically stronger. They seem to exert a lot more presence because they seem to have far more fire in their belly. They don't just sit there and talk about the theological, but they also speak about the secular with a greater degree of passion and fuse the two of them. The Anglican Church has appeared to retreat in Barbados over the years. So I don't know if you share that view, but that's how I see it.
I hear you. I understand you. But my response to that would be, that is exactly why the people should be listened to now. exactly the reason. Because it would appear, and for those who have been close to the scene or in the middle of it, that the very candidate has the qualities which you have just enunciated.
But you know you're running
but
the
I, but
you're running
but I'm
the
not,
risk.
I'm not
you're running,
I'm not dealing
sorry.
With that so much.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is this. How important are the people? How important? And if they are very important, I think somebody has to listen to them.
Okay.
They've been four wrongs.
All right. Thank you very much, Tony Marshall. Down to Brass Tacks at 1:42 in the afternoon. Hello.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Ellis.
Hi.
How are you doing, my brother?
I am well, and you?
That's quite as usual.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I call you, Ruth. I want to be National Stadium.
With who?
The National Stadium.
The National Stadium?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. Now, I can remember a couple time ago, okay, that Mr. Lashley come and said with the school sports that he'd have built a new stadium. Remember that?
Yeah.
Huh? No, I say it's today's paper, or yesterday's paper, that they said that the Chinese ain't publishing no more, right? Hello?
Yeah, I'm listening to you.
Good. Now, between that and the Billy Stadium, he said that that he want every Barbados to pay $1 to Billy Stadium. Okay? You remember that?
Yeah.
Good. Now, when I read the paper now, and they're telling me that the Chinese government fits act ain't doing it anymore, right? My million question is this here. Why after the parliament get done, right? That them there don't do the civil you call it. Why? Though I concern about sport, I concern about young people. All right? And the people find the best and yes they're giving the worst to them. How you feel about that?
Well, obviously it is made more difficult because of financial constraints. There's no doubt.
I know that. Yeah.
We need to have a new stadium, but it is to understand where it is that the Chinese pulled out. I suppose we will soon, one of these days, we will find out the details of that.
But yes and no. When the athletes go over in there, right? When the athletes go over in there, I come back with a couple of medals, you see a hullabaloo there at the airport.
But there's a good
right?
reason for that.
Pardon?
There's a good reason for that.
Is a good reason for that, right? Now, how do they promote these people, these young people, you know, and ain't got no avenue really for them? Huh? Hello?
Yeah, well, as I said to you, I understand your concern, and the desire is for us to get some improvement, but I would submit to you that we need to get past these elections first. After these elections, we will be in a better position to determine what is going to happen with the National Stadium. Then, you know, you can proceed and we negotiate with the Chinese or whoever else and try to see private sector, for instance, may well be able to play some role in trying to deal with that. We've got these private public sector partnerships that have sprung up in recent years. So all of that is available to us. But I understand your concern. But you tell me, why are you so concerned about it? You're a former athlete or something?
No, I'm not a former athlete. No, not for like that. I never had the opportunity to do it, okay?
So what causes you to be this concerned about that?
Because I like sports.
Right, a lot.
Now, what happens though that when we sports put good there, you understand?
Yes.
When they do good, they come back, you have a look. You understand that?
Yes.
When they do good, you don't hear nobody there, you don't see nobody there, no nothing.
Yes.
You know
all
what
right.
Me?
Okay, thank you very much. There's been some reaction here to the point raised by Tony Marshall. One person says here, the bishop has to work with the clergy, the priests work with the laity. So that person says that if the priests have a difficulty working with the person who is chosen, then that can present a challenge. Somebody else says to me that the convention in the election of a bishop is that the priest who is ahead in the house, that person would, who is ahead in the house in the count, then the other candidate withdraws. Okay, so the one who is behind, who is supposed to withdraw according to convention, so says this person who is also a well-known member of the Anglican Church. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Hello. Good day, Mr. Eric.
Hi, good day. Good day. You're on the air.
I thank you to be on the air. I want to reply to, at least I heard an earlier caller was talking about how government workers are civil servants, speaking about pay increase for these people, right? And speak about what Ms. Tasha said, you gotta earn it. But to be honest, I can't see where right now public service would have to earn a pay increase. When, if you look at it, Mr. Ellis, you know that all the public servants are working for the last increase that went after left before the Barbados Labour Party went into power. And you couldn't want a government service to be more painstaking than this present one to be doing what they are doing now without an increase. Can you imagine that this government just after the House was adjourned signing day, said we are not entertaining the unions in respect of negotiation for salary?
So that's tough leadership.
You think so, Mr. Harris?
That's one way that you can spin it.
That is dictatorial, not tough.
You can spin it as such. You see, that's tough leadership. That's when.
But this is
so, let me put it to you this way. If you listen to politicians long enough, you know what to anticipate that they will say about it. That the country could not afford this at all. And that the essence of being a strong and decisive leader is being able to say no when in your judgment a particular policy or approach is likely to damage the country as a whole. How would you respond to that?
I don't think so, Mr. Ellis.
Well, tell me what you think.
I think that the statement by the government is one which will tell the masses what action they're going to take on 24 for this month or next month. That is what I think. And if you consider, well, that the government is bold enough to make a statement like that, well, I will go accept what you have said. But basically,
don't worry about whether I accept it or not, because part of my role here is not necessarily to tell you things that I genuinely believe, but to give you an alternative point of view.
So I do agree.
You know, so but that you, we get something to look, sure.
Mm-hmm. I want you to look at an alternative and the fact.
Yes.
That taxation on the masses is so draconian at this stage that anybody would believe that a union would want an increase for its persons.
But do you hear the government when they argue this case? We're going to hear it again, huh? So just
I hope that I will hear it again.
Well, let me tell you what I hear. I hear an argument that says that when Barbados was in a better economic position, a number of things that should have been done by the Barbados Labour Party were not done. All right?
Yeah.
And that the Democratic Labour Party found itself fighting the worst recession in 100 years or something near to that. And in those circumstances, it had to make cuts and people had to make sacrifices. But we have started to turn the corner because there was a 1% increase in growth or something like that, or 1.5%. And they met with the private sector and the unions just prior to the dissolution of Parliament and got an agreement, which means that you have the buy-in of all three of those sectors. And with that, therefore, you can expect that you have a plan for taking the country forward. That is what I hear from the Democratic Labour Party, and that, you know, such as this decision and the decision with respect to tuition fees and that sort of thing, that these were tough decisions that had to be made in the interests of the country's viability and future.
I don't want to agree to that, Mr.
Well, tell me what is your alternative view?
Before I get to the alternative view, I want to revisit between 1991 and 1994. I have heard members of this government continue to speak of in time of plenty. When Alpha took the country, you would agree that this country had nothing to rely upon. After Sir Erskine would have given up the government, as they say, political stakes, they had nothing to rely upon. The worst situation Barbados were ever in is between 91 and 94, Ms. Ellis, and you know that full well. With 2 weeks of foreign reserves. 2 weeks of foreign reserves.
Okay. Well, thank you. I gotta leave you because I have a number of people and only have a short period of time now.
All right.
And I don't wanna chase you, but I just, in the circumstances, I'm gonna try to see how many people I can get in here. This issue relating to the election of a new bishop for the Anglican Church, this person says that in their judgment, Reverend Rogers has years ahead of him. He can come again in 9 to 10 years. And they also agree with this notion that the candidate that's behind in the House of the Clergy steps down according to tradition. Do we have another caller here? Hello?
Hello. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon.
Just to make a brief comment regarding the election for the Anglican Church.
Your line is pretty poor. I don't know.
I'm sorry. Are you hearing me better?
Yes, thanks.
Great. I've just shifted my position slightly. Well, I've got a comment. And let me just say that, you know, there are rules which have to be followed. And obviously, people have the candidates that they're backing. There's nothing wrong with that in the democracy. But I think what has to be kept in the forefront of our minds at all times is that there are certain rules which govern the election of a bishop. You don't change the rules midway. Evidently, candidates who have allowed themselves to be nominated agreed to those rules before entering the process. The fact that it might not go one way or the other, depending on people's preferences, does not mean that you change the rules midstream. Now, if the thought is that the church is the people, and therefore the people should prevail, as seems to be suggested, well, change the rules. But once you've entered the process, evidently take of the wishes of the people, meaning the congregation, as well as wishes of the clergy, then the process should be followed.
Now, for people who have not been following the process closely, what rule, if any, has been changed?
Well, no, I'm not suggesting that rule has been changed.
Okay.
But it seems to be a question that the rule should be changed now, in that since they...
this line is terrible. So...
Then that...
Sorry, we missed that last point you were making.
Okay, let me just shift my position slightly and hopefully the line would be better. I was saying I'm not suggesting that a rule has been changed.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that it appears to me that there is a suggestion that there should be a change in the rules now, in that if there is a situation where there are two candidates involved, as there are now, and one seems to be preferred by the laity, and one appears to be preferred by the clergy, and there's a suggestion that since the laity is the church, and since the church, being the laity, has obviously shown a preference for a particular candidate, well, then it appears that the choice of the laity should prevail. And I'm saying then that will evidently mean a change in the rules midstream. The process has already begun under the rules that are laid down by the Anglican Church.
Yes, I understand.
Do you see my point?
I understand your point. Well, I hope to get it resolved quickly. And in all of this, it must always be understood that it is the church, and therefore there are many people who are looking on to see what happens. You know, in Rome, when they're choosing the Pope, it's the smokestack from the chimney.
Yes.
The smoke from the chimney tells you whether they have reached the agreement or not, but you don't know how many times they fail to reach agreement before
that's
they got
the point.
There.
That's
and perhaps that's what's wrong with our process right now.
and there have been situations in the past regarding the choice of the Pope where there was quite some controversy, and there were some candidates that who eventually prevailed that were quite unexpected. And that is how it works.
You only knew after the fact, though.
And you know after the fact.
Yes.
And you know after the fact.
All right.
So there you go.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you for your time, Mr. Ellis.
Thank you very much for calling. That's it for today's edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Thanks to Ronnie Clark, and thanks to Daddy Biggs, the person who's been assisting us otherwise. Do have a great afternoon.